ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय If she is given independence and allowed to mingle unrestrictedly with men, she will be spoiled. A spoiled woman, being manipulated by paramours, might even kill her husband. This example is given here because a yogi desiring to get free from material condition must always keep his mind under control. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that in the morning our first business should be to beat the mind shoes 100 times, and before going to bed to beat the mind 100 times with the broomstick. In this way, one's mind can be kept under control. An uncontrolled mind and an unchaste wife are the same. An unchaste wife can kill her husband at any time, and an uncontrolled mind followed by lust and greed, madness, envy and illusion can certainly kill the yogi. When the yogi is controlled by the mind, he falls down into material condition. One should be very careful of the mind, just as a husband should be very careful of an unchaste wife.
ममज्ञानतिलंदस्य नंदनाशलाकया चक्षुरंगितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोविष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वरूपकदाम्यं ददाति स्वपरान्तिकम्। हे कृष्ण करुणासिन्धु दीनबन्धुविरक्तते गोपेश गोपिकान्तराधाकान्तनमोऽस्तुते तप्तकाञ्चन गौरांगी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी विश्वानो सुदेवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिय मंचाकल्पतरुभ्यश्चैवासिन्धुभ्यो च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासवि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम।
This verse is talking about a yogi who can control mind. I honestly feel not the right person to speak on that. Struggling with the mind and uncontrolled senses. Seeking blessings of Vaishnavas for hearing on and who was present here to be able to speak on this topic so that whatever I speak can be applied in a personal life. So here we see a continuation where the activities of Lord Vishnudev will be described, and that's where it's leading to. And soon we'll see how amazing transcendental pastimes of Lord Vishnudev, where he'll be leaving his body, he'll be disappearing in the pastime, and how how. Even though being fully transcendental, even though completely beyond the modes of material nature, he'll act as if he's one of the products of material energy, which he's not. And that will, and then while he'll be acting as one of us, his transcendental qualities will still be revealed. And naturally we'll see in the chapter Prabhupada also writes that once Lord Vishnudev goes, then one of the followers, one of the kings, will give rise to a religion called Jainism, which is many people that do follow that, and they have quite a bit of fondness for Lord Rishabdev. And through Lord Rishabdev, it's easy to help them to connect to Bhagavatam also. So particularly in this verse, and which was yesterday's verse, which discussed Sankeshan Prabhu spoke on, it's talking directly about the restless uncontrolled mind. And that restless uncontrolled mind, and particularly specifically in this verse, especially the uncontrolled mind of a yogi is compared to an unchaste woman, which can cheat or even kill the husband if encouraged by the paramount. So, I was reading the transcription of Srila Prabhupada's lecture on this, and Prabhupada begins again as he begins his purport by explaining the word Pumshali, which refers to an unchaste woman, which can be carried away. Prabhupada in his lecture he was mentioning this point, which we have heard many times, which has created controversy, is not understood properly, and which is why there is so much restriction on women, why not on men. Prabhupada made a nice point which somehow we have read and heard many times, but this particular point is, I really liked it. And he was saying, he's not speaking too much on the less intelligence aspect and all those aspects which again creates a lot of questions. But he was speaking on the point of that material energy, material nature has created all the different species. And according to that, there is a particular nature which every species, every being has. And one of the nature which Prabhupada was saying, which is there, which every woman has, if she is naturally protected, is that a woman is innocent. And that innocence can be exploited. So she should be given protection, as in the purport Prabhupada very strongly says, that must be strictly under the control of father. The world is strictly under the control of husband, and then elderly son when she is old. And that is just so that people should not exploit her innocence. And of course, in the same lecture, Prabhupada is talking that, oh, I have been criticized a lot in the newspapers when I speak about this subject matter. So I mean, personally, I will not speak too much on this subject matter. Already enough is spoken. So there is nothing new which I will be adding on. But connecting that to this particular verse where it is compared to an uncontrolled mind, one thing strike me as I was trying to compare it with uncontrolled mind, that mind is not innocent. Mind is a in and out rascal. And the control of the mind, which may sound pretty restrictive, is actually a sign of civilization. Actually, in any proper civilization, from very childhood, one is trained that one should know how to control the mind. You know, it's not well, it's not exactly like the way we say in the Wild West, which is the Wild East also now, that then there is no cap. There is no restriction when it comes to one's desire. If you have facility, if you have resource, then, and if you have desire, and if your desire matches with the resource, then just fulfill it. And if your desire doesn't match with the resource you have, then work to get the resource and then fulfill your desire. But never there is a training given that to put a question, why do you need to fulfill it? Can't you control? Can't you avoid? Until you neglect to fulfill such and such desire. So, if we see the way in civilized societies, especially see that, let's if we take an example of Vedic society, we read the scriptures and we see many of the desires which the modern world is aspiring for were outright rejected. They were not delayed even. They were not even told that don't work hard. It's not said like that. Don't work hard to make money just so that you can buy a big house. It says, why do you need a big house? Why can't you live simply? So the desires of the mind are not just treated as something which can be fulfilled once you have certain resources. It's actually in many cases completely rejected. Why? Because, like Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj very strongly again says, it is important for us to learn that we have to beat the mind. Basically, to calm the mind down, to control the mind, to tame the mind. And if you see, you know, even if these violent, ferocious tigers, the way they are controlled, if one can actually study how they are controlled, one really learns a lot when one is trying to deal with the mind. A tiger, when in the cage, is kept hungry. He is kept seriously hungry. And he is roaring. And he roars so loud that if a person hears that roar, you know, bones will shiver. But the person who is taming the tiger, he knows very well that this is the psychology tiger works with. And more this person is going to starve the tiger, louder and ferociously the tiger is going to roar. But the guy who is going to bring the tiger under control, he doesn't budge. He understands the nature of the tiger, of the lion. And he lets the tiger or the lion roar to the maximum capacity without getting scared. But he knows in due course, within just few days of being hungry, the roar will come down. The tiger will start to fall under control. Sorry. And eventually what happens is that same tiger starts to act like cat. So an expert person who knows this psychology of the tiger, he doesn't get scared by the violent roar of the tiger. Similarly with us, initially the mind, when the desire is not fulfilled, or at least the previous habits which we have, when they are not fulfilled, mind roars and roars loudly. And they are not fulfilled again and again, then mind roars even loudly. But under the guidance of spiritual master, under the guidance of devotees, if you can understand the nature of the mind and how the mind can be tamed, and if you do not give in and fulfill those desires, this roaring reduces of the mind also. And mind becomes quieter and calmer and starts to follow. But it takes time and it takes patience. It's not a day or a week or a month's training. It can take years. But it's a very productive investment, because once this mind is under control, practically they say, once the mind is under control, one can get the whole world under control. In a sense that one can achieve the perfection of human life just by bringing this one entity under control. So, but one of the aspects, amongst many other tantrums which mind throws, one of the most classic tantrums, or the classic behavior seen of the mind, is the aspect of mind rationalizing things. The meaning of word rationalization is, that is, an action of attempting to explain or justify behavior or an attitude with logical reasons, even if these are not appropriate. So rationalization of mind, which mind does a lot, is that it is justifying the reasons of certain actions which are actually not appropriate or right, but it will make us feel that what we are doing is right. And that goes a lot, especially with devotees. Anyone does that, but with devotees, because after becoming devotees, we hear already, we have heard tens and hundreds of times what is right, what is wrong. And when we still find ourselves being wrong, most of the time it is due to either weak mind or rationalizing our faculty within us, within the mind especially, it starts this music within that yes, what you are doing is right because of such and such reason. Oh yes, you are cheating Krishna, but you are actually not cheating Krishna. You are waiting for Krishna only. So how are you cheating Krishna? You are not cheating your spiritual master. You are actually doing it to serve him. And then you are actually not breaking a regulative principle. But and then the test mind goes on and on. And it gives reasons and you feel so confident. And one feels so advanced even while following the dictation of the mind. Because as soon as a desire comes, as soon as a desire arises within us, philosophically we have heard it's wrong. But the mind, to cheat us, will give counter reasons. And then if we start to live in, exactly like the roaring of the tiger. Now tiger only has one option. It can roar. It can try to scare you. And if you don't listen, the person who is taming the tiger, if he doesn't listen, tiger will calm down. But mind is much, much more smarter than just the roaring tiger. It will use many other tactics. And this one is a very classic tactic that even to break a regulative principle, it will give reason and it will sound right. So lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, envy, these are basically the followers of corrupted mind. And when we see ourselves getting trapped into lust, greed, as the word is also, mind does give amazing reasons. Investment property, future protection, saving money, family, bank balance. That time mind doesn't suggest the examples the scripture talks about when it comes to work, over endeavoring, working harder just to save money, just to work, just to have enough bank balance. What the mind is going to rationalize? Early retirement. So that we can serve Krishna through and through. Holy involvement on property in the dham. And this is how amazingly we will cheat ourselves. Why? I read something very powerful from Bhagavad Gita. Srila Prabhupada talks about it. In verse 4 of chapter 10, this is a particular shloka where Srila Prabhupada is talking about many other points. And two points he takes, which is dhamma and sama, control of the senses and control of the mind. So in control of senses, Srila Prabhupada says, he says that control of senses means that senses should not be used for unnecessary personal enjoyment. There is no prohibition against meeting the proper needs of the senses. But unnecessary sense enjoyment is detrimental for spiritual advancement. Therefore, the senses should be restrained from unnecessary use. So it's a very, actually if you see, this particular paragraph that you read, it helps one really appreciate bhakti yoga system amongst all other yoga practices, where sense enjoyment to a certain degree is not rejected. It's legalized. But unnecessary enjoyment is restricted, is rejected. So, you know, Chaitanya Chandra was once giving a very nice example. And he was mentioning that we hear from Srila Prabhupada that if there is an itch and you start scratching, it turns into a wound. That means if you have sense desire and if you start fulfilling it, it gradually ends up in a wound. But he was mentioning that not all the itch will lead to a wound. Some itch, some type of itch are there. If you just scratch a bit, it goes away. But there are certain types of itch you feel. If you scratch, it increases. And it increases and that turns into a wound. So similar understanding what Srila Prabhupada is saying, that some enjoyment of senses, which is required, will not take us away from Krishna consciousness. Which will not take us away from our spiritual goal. But some type of sense enjoyment will actually take us very far from Krishna consciousness, and that has to be identified. And Srila Prabhupada gives a very amazing solution when he's talking about how to do that, how to understand, when he's speaking about control of mind. Srila Prabhupada says, Sama, control of mind. One should restrain the mind from unnecessary thoughts. That is called Sama. He takes the example of earning money here. He says, one should not spend one's time pondering over earning money. That is a misuse of thinking power. The mind should be used to understand the prime necessity of human beings, and that should be presented authoritatively. And now he gives a solution how to actually do that. He says the power of thought should be developed in association with persons who are authorities in scriptures, saintly persons and spiritual masters, and those whose thinking is highly developed. So if you very carefully observe, when we start becoming devotees, when we start to come to Krishna consciousness, if this principle is taught to every devotee, that okay, previously whatever things we have done, fine. But now onwards, start developing your thinking process under the guidance in the association of those who are authorities in scriptures, saintly persons, spiritual master, and those whose thinking is highly developed. And we see those particular devotees who have actually developed their thought process under proper guidance from very beginning, or even in later stages, they have done wonders in their spiritual careers. Why? Because they have learned the art of how to deal with the urges of the mind and senses when they strike. And when they strike hard, they know, because they have learned from those who are authorities. Yeah. Very interesting one. You know, there is a verse which we have heard hundreds of times, when as soon as the topic of controlling the senses and mind comes in place. Any guess? Huh?
I think I'll make it clear that
what is the process of controlling the mind and senses? This verse we have heard, I don't know how many times. How to control the mind and senses? What is the way? What is the process? Mahabharata speaks, talks about. When I tell you the verse, everyone says, oh, my mind. I said, how to control the mind and senses? This verse, I think every third lecture you hear this verse. Savayamana Krishna Padarante Vachamsi Vaikuntha Gunanavarmane. So basically, it is an example of Mahārāja Yudhiṣṭhira, how he engaged his mind in meditating on the lotus feet of Krishna. His words glorifying the Lord. Hands cleansing the temple. His ears in hearing the words spoken by Krishna or about Krishna. Engaging eyes in seeing the deity of Krishna and Krishna's temple and Krishna's place like Mathura and Vrindavan. He engaged his sense of touch in touching the bodies of the Lord's devotees. He engaged his sense of smell in smelling the fragrance of tulsi offered to the Lord. He engaged his tongue in tasting Lord's prasad. He engaged his legs in walking to the holy places and temples of the Lord. His head in bowing down before the Lord. And all desires in serving the Lord 24 hours a day. Indeed, Mahārāja Yudhiṣṭhira never desired anything for his own sense gratification. He engaged all his senses in devotional service, in various engagements related to the Lord. And then verse concludes, this is the way to increase attachment for the Lord and be completely free from material desire. So when I was reading this verse, I was expecting in the purport Prabhupada will really elaborate more on this activity. But the way Prabhupada explains the purport is amazing. He takes it to a different level, which is not a single word of that is mentioned in the verse. He begins with the purport by saying that he says that one can achieve this stage. He's not talking about the activities. He's explaining how to achieve this stage. He says that by taking shelter of a guru. By taking shelter of a guru, and then the guru will engage in these activities, because we don't know how to engage in these activities. If we see the example of what Srila Prabhupada has done, Srila Prabhupada actually created a facility for all this to happen. If he would have created this facility, we would be just having a hall once a week, just do kirtan maximum, some lecture, and then dance and go. No, the whole list mentioned here, Srila Prabhupada has systematically established in this song. So Prabhupada himself says that the guru will engage in the above process of engaging one's body and mind in serving Krishna, and then human perfection is possible. Otherwise, it's not. So when we see the example here, the comparison given of unchaste wife killing husband and the restless mind, which is controlled by lust and greed, etc., killing the yogi, which means killing his yogi process, this is yogi progression. When a yogi, this topic is taken, like in the previous verse, Shaubhari Muni's example was taken, who was very determined, who was extremely determined to practice his meditation to that degree that to avoid any distraction, he entered the water and meditated for thousands of years. Now when as devotees we hear the example of Haridas Thakur in comparison to Shaubhari Muni, it relieves us to a level that, oh, just by chanting Hare Krishna, I can be protected. But what chanting of Hare Krishna Haridas Thakur was doing? In yesterday's verse, Prabhupada explains in the purport that offenseless chanting could only lead him to control his mind and senses. If we are not on that stage or a very sincere attempt of offenseless chanting, then where are we even compared to Shaubhari Muni? If our spiritual practices are not done properly, who are we in comparison to the strict principles followed by Shaubhari Muni? We are nowhere near. Still he fell. And many devotees do wonder, I am chanting Hare Krishna, why did I fall down? What happened to me? What made me fall down? So, Srila Prabhupada's that story, which is another very famous one, where Srila Prabhupada is very boldly speaking to his disciples that I will never fall down. Maya cannot make me fall down. And then Srila Prabhupada later very intensely praying in front of the deities, and disciple asks him, what are you praying? And he's saying, I'm praying to Radharani, to Krishna, that please do not let me fall into the illusory energy. And the devotees are puzzled. Just now, sometime back you said that Maya cannot touch you, you cannot fall down. And now you are saying you are praying to Krishna that please don't let me fall down into your illusory energy. Prabhupada said yes. Because I very intensely pray, I can boldly say. You don't pray intensely, you cannot even say what is your boldly say. So that is our condition. But that is the solution itself also. Now we see in 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, especially from verses 5 to 9 and then onwards, it explains how these modes of material nature are so systematically binding us. Especially the person who is in mode of goodness, he is doing everything right. He is doing everything right and still he is bound. Why? Because he thinks he is doing everything right and he is proud. He has been proud about it. So, where is the hope? Where is the hope? If the mode of goodness which we are struggling to achieve, personally, I can talk about myself, we are struggling to achieve mode of goodness, or bring our activities mode of goodness, bring our eating, sleeping, recreation in mode of goodness is hard. When a person in complete mode of goodness is bound and cannot rise to the spiritual climax, what is our hope? Our hope is only Bhagavad Gita's Krishna's assurance where it says, Maam evaya prapadyante mayam tantarantate devi yasya gunamayama mamaya gurate. That this material energy, which is the three modes of material nature, are so difficult to overcome, they are so hard to cross beyond, that only and only if one comes to the stage of this particular understanding, which the verse is saying, that everything engaged in Krishna service and all desires in serving the Lord 24 hours a day and not desiring anything but for one's own sense gratification and only for Krishna's pleasure, then only it is possible. Otherwise, there is a hope. When I think about it, you know, you feel hopeless, honestly. Then there is a hope. That is the only option. If Krishna, seeing the broken, useless endeavors, becomes pleased, that's the only hope and that's the only option we have. Because mind is always going to give lusty thoughts. Always. Mind is, that's how it's trained and that's how it will act. But if one cannot understand how the mind will always keep giving lusty thought and we just cannot trust the mind. For most of us, the major challenge is to come to this conclusion that I will not trust my mind. It's hard. Theoretically, it's very easy to say, Prabhu, don't trust your mind. Not that you don't trust your mind. But we constantly do that in every action of our life. Actually, it's a very good practice if one gets a chance to closely spend some time, whether to travel or just by service or being with very senior advanced devotees or spiritual master. It's a really good practice if one can do that, or very closely observe how they put this principle of Maharajan Rish, which he's talking about, in practical life, how they do it. And when we very closely see how spiritual masters are very advanced Vaishnavas, they just very consciously utilize their time, their energy, their senses and their mind in serving Krishna. That practical example is worth 1000 times reading this verse, these shlokas. And it's a good practice if one can do that. Because in mind, within us, we know that the sense objects are there and the senses are superior to the sense objects. Then the mind is superior to the senses. And superior to mind is intelligence, and then superior to intelligence is soul. So basically within us, just if we talk about us as a unit, within us there are two faculties which are superior to mind. One is intelligence and one is soul. Now when we talk about soul, forget it, we don't have access to soul. We only through scripture we understand the theoretical reality of soul. We don't have access to our soul at this stage. So only thing we are left with is intelligence. And if that intelligence can be worked upon, if that intelligence is trained, as we were previously discussing, Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, is trained under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, then we have some hope to control this unbridled mind, to bring it under some restriction. For many devotees, they may not have that much time or energy to really invest in strengthening one's intelligence by reading and hearing. So for those devotees, one suggestion can be, or one aspect they can try is, if you feel your intelligence is not enough, ready to control the mind, please hire intelligence. Hire intelligence from those who have some intelligence. That means associate with right-minded, proper devotees and develop, or at least by their example, one learn how to basically control this mind. And one aspect one can use when one is talking about intelligence or hiring intelligence or taking guidance from devotees, that is if one can learn, if one can understand, if actually one can practice not to just solely take important decisions in one's life. If one can avoid taking main decisions of one's life just by individual contemplation, that itself will create a lot of smoothness in one's material life, which will naturally help one's spiritual life also. Because if we start taking all our major decisions, see what to eat for breakfast is a minor decision. One can solely take it. But especially when it comes to single man or woman choosing partners, when it comes to serious decisions in terms of careers and you have to move from one place to another, or associating or attending certain programs or listening to certain speaker, if we just without proper guidance, if we take these very major decisions, these decisions are really going to create serious impressions within us. And if those impressions are negative by any chance, we are really going to fall short to our goal, which is our very serious spiritual goal. So really, if we can really try and take guidance, when one is taking major decisions in one's life, one can save one from great difficulty. So these are some of the things I just wanted to discuss from this purport. Actually, this morning only I realized that I have to give class. So, but this is very, very important verse in this whole section, especially in the next verse also. So, I'll just stop there and see if there are any questions or comments.
Thank you for the class. You mentioned how sometimes if there is an age or a tendency to enjoy, then it can either turn into a wound or it can be satisfied if you scratch the itch. So you said, so it's okay to enjoy senses that was still because of Krishna consciousness. What are some examples?
See, so basically, I mentioned the point that some itch, if we have, is okay to scratch because it will relieve us from that itch. But some cannot be done. So what are the examples of that? And one very classic example is what we eat. You know, the amount of opulent food we eat. It's a sense of enjoyment actually, if you see. We are practicing yogis, and if other yogis see us, if other yogis were on shoots and roots, or who are on some fruit diet or whatever diet they eat, and if they see us, then it's mind-boggling, it's bewildering, you know, you're also a yogi, I'm also a yogi, I'm really yogi, or a yogi. So, but that particular sense of enjoyment we do. Because first thing is offered to Krishna is prasad, and just if we are eating something good once in a while, under control, not overdoing it every day, every meal, it doesn't take us away from Krishna. If same prasad is taken 3 times a day, completely opulent, 7 times a week, throughout the year, you will see even this will take you away from Krishna. Even though it's prasad. Why? Because health will break down. Then mind will be disturbed if health breaks down. And then what will be affected? Our already weak sadhana. So, and that's why Prabhupada gives certain regulations even in prasad eating. Not overly opulent, not under-related food also. One time Prabhupada was in a temple and something was offered to Krishna, and it was very imperative. Prabhupada actually used the word, he said, it's food for dogs. Now devotees can, he literally said, throw it, it's useless. And then in one occasion, Prabhupada says, give nice prasadam to devotees because this is the only sense enjoyment they have. So this is one example. If someone is in family life, then some entertainment, some recreation, some sense enjoyment is natural with it. But more indulge or overly indulge is going to mind you because that's how it's designed to be. The problem is if even if someone is in grihastha ashram or brahmachari or temple resident, whatever, if the indulgence in sense enjoyment is done based on solely on mind's desire or mind's suggestions, that's a problem. If indulgence in sensual enjoyment is done under guidance or through reference of scriptures, that type of sensual enjoyment will just satisfy the itch, which will not lead to a wound. Basically, that's one of the points you understood. So, you know, there's so many ways, so many sense enjoyments which we as devotees are doing, which Jnana Yogi or Hatha Yogi or a serious practitioner of Karma Yogi doesn't do. But we do. We dance. Hearing music is a sense enjoyment. It's made of an ear. We are not rejectionists. We are not just rejecting the whole society, all the needs of the senses. Our principle is very simple. Anukulasya sankalpa, pratikulasya vajana. Accept whatever is favorable to your Krishna consciousness, reject whatever is unfavorable. It's very, very simple principle we have. So satisfy the itch which doesn't take you away from Krishna, and do not satisfy the itch which takes you away from Krishna. Is that okay? Anything else?
Thank you, Maharaj. That was very instructive. Prabhupada found very interesting points. And so I was trying to link that with the Upanishad Gita. The text about how the do's and don'ts that we should do. And the point that you mentioned about the taking more emphasis in the facility, the intelligence to control the mind, because our mind is not controlled yet. So we can access to the effect of the power of the intelligence through the association of getting connected with people who got that level. So that link with the, for example, by Sanrita about the specific points on to control the specific senses, like the tongue, the mind in one sense, but also the prescription that facilitate that, because my concern right now is, yes, it's good to identify our enemy, in this case the mind, uncontrolled mind, but the goal is also make the mind to be our friend. So it's not just I have to picture in my intelligence, I have to make my mind my friend, because it's a way also to utilize emotional settings.
Yes. So it's a good point you mentioned, that we are not just going to beat the mind morning and night and just keep beating for the whole life and for the rest of creation. But we have to bring this mind, which is enemy at this stage, to the level of friend. The problem with prematurely trying to see mind as friend is that this friend can cheat, and it's claimed to cheat, and it's cheating throughout. So even with very advanced devotees, and I remember this one example I've heard many times about the Mahavishnu Maharaj saying, even though he was directly trained by Prabhupada, very closely he observed him, that even I do not trust my mind when I have to take important decisions for the society. I also consult my god brothers, because my mind can give wrong suggestions. And this is one of the reasons when I was preparing this point, that it's a very good practice to spend time or observe how very advanced devotees operate. You see, even though the mind is their friend, they still don't trust the mind. And even though the mind is their friend, mind will not give them suggestions of sense enjoyment. Mind has stopped because they are on a very advanced platform. Still, they have trained themselves not to just blindly trust the mind. Still, take guidance or suggestion, or at least, or as we say, just bounce off to someone who is more intelligent and just see what options they give. Because one cannot forget that mind is overly expert in rationalization, and we just will never even figure out. And it can take even decades to even trace back, or rationalization caused me to take such decision. And it appeared that it was a very classic decision, completely scripturally based. So yes, we have to make our mind as our friend. But Prabhupada do say that in the previous verse, I think Prabhupada says, still do not trust the mind. Even though he's a friend, just blindly don't trust the mind. Still good to just see what is. And then and there are sometimes occasions, especially when you're managing or managing a society or a company or a business or your own personal life or a family life, that there are sometimes decisions which one has to take and one cannot take, involve someone else. But we can always involve the super soul and the supreme lord and guru. Even if we directly cannot tell the spiritual master, there must be some decision we cannot tell. A family person cannot tell everything what they are deciding to the spiritual master. Some things are private. But to the Supreme Lord, one can sincerely pray while one has worked around all the different options and it appears to be a friendly decision of the mind. One can still offer a very sincere prayer to the Kurala Bala Bhagavata Jagannatha Subhadra that please, if you still think it's an enemy decision, please you make diligence to back off. And it really helps. Actually, if you see, one time I was doing certain things, devotees approved, everyone approved around me, and I was basically doing that particular service. But somehow in my mind, there was a very strong confusion was there. Should I still continue to do it or not? Because should I still push for the service? And I was every single day praying to the deities. And it took 6-7-8 days. And after 6-7-8 days, it just became very clear that I should not do the service or this particular thing I was doing. So, prayer to help. I was watching one article, I forgot. In which that devotee was saying that prayers in ISKCON are really getting neglected. Offering prayers to the Supreme Lord is not very encouraged. But that's the whole idea of us as devotee, to constantly offer prayers to the Supreme Lord for any decision, any aspect, any issue, any problem, any obstacle we face in our spiritual progress. And it helps. And those devotees who actually understand this point, you see, you know, so many advanced devotees, they will see some lectures on how to offer prayers, importance of prayers. Because if you see our day-to-day life, we chant Hare Krishna, we do some service, we keep moving, we read scriptures, and we continue with our service. How often do we stop in a day? Or how many times in a week we find ourselves very intensely standing in front of deities and praying? Buddha who encourages this so many times. If you really continue any issue, just go in front of another room and just pray. And he gave one time a very nice example. Mataji, she was from a Muslim background, became a devotee. Practicing for many years, but one thing was stuck, that how one can be a person. It was very much ingrained from childhood in that it's God energy, we don't know, cannot be a person. And she expressed this to Gurudevu, and Gurudevu suggested a reverend Vrindavan that go to Balaram and offer your prayers and just tell whatever confusion you have and just speak, just tell him. So she went, she was standing there for 35-40 minutes. Because before that, before Gurudevu gave the solution, he philosophically explained her everything, how God is a person. And she said, I am not convinced. After hearing the whole series of suggestions from the group. But then Gurudevu finally gave up and said, go to Balaram. That's the last resort. Go and pray. And if you still feel, then you decide what you want to do. You want to continue the process or not. And she prayed 35-40 minutes, and then later she came very excited to go to the room that I am convinced God is a person. So prayer is very powerful to control this mind, to take right decisions of this mind and basically to basically conclude that even though this mind may be a friend, but still to be do the final check whether it's a friendly decision from the mind or not.
Perhaps also revising the concept of friend, because what means to be a friend in this case, understanding the, as you mentioned, checking if it's a friend or not, perhaps with that awareness is maybe just utilizing the functions of the mind but not relying on that.
Okay, thank you.